Paul, thank you for being here, man. This is so fun. I think so many people probably have heard kind of like your story about Tecovas, how it got started and everything like that.
But we also are both wearing Tecovas. Like, we already knew a little bit about you anyways.
Yes, we did.
Because we love the boots.
I did notice.
Yeah. Yes, we try.
This is not a show. We actually both wear cowboy boots a lot.
Well, yeah. Likewise, I bought Ranger Station before I knew that we even had a meeting together. So that's great.
That is so cool.
That's cool. I love, like, I always say all the kind of like partnerships that I feel like we end up in, it's always like, this is how it happens. I feel like where it's like, oh man, there's like a ton of mutual respect. And just, I think there's something about like this just kind of like American dream craftsmanship thing that like just brings people together. So thank you for saying that. That's, thank you for being supporting what we're doing. So yeah, I'm excited that we get to hang out.
Yeah. Do you carry a koozie in your back pocket at all times? I've been wondering that since you pulled it out. I'm just wondering.
I do have that habit. I've had it for about 13 years, I think.
That is such a flex.
Yep, I do. Do you have a koozie? It does have a curse word on it. I don't know if I need to bleep it out, but
that's okay. Yeah, we can. Yeah, we'll just blur it out on the video.
Shane Smith and the Saints.
We served waters earlier, and he just pulled a koozie out, and everyone
right out
was
the
like,
back pocket.
What just happened?
That is so incredible. You were doing that. So y'all do that in all. You have koozies in all the stores, yeah?
We do. Yeah. It's funny. I used to live in New York, and I really liked to throw parties, and my roommates and I in New York decided when we throw parties, we want to do it right. We want to have themes and we want to have koozies. That was my big idea. And so I actually found a koozie manufacturer way before I needed them for professional reasons.
Oh.
And then we ended up, it's funny because when we needed to make koozies, because I wanted to give a koozie away in every box of boots when we first started, and we still do that for the most part. And I was like, well, I actually know where to make them. And that one call for 50, I think I put George Bush's face in a Santa hat on a koozie in 2012.
That's
and,
amazing.
That company has now gotten probably half a million.
They're really grateful
from
for
us.
Your,
really, you're a koozie company that makes boots. Yeah. At this point, that's amazing.
What kind of parties were these?
Just an excuse to get together and.
Like, were you serving
beer?
Yeah.
This is before
the wine and tequila
before,
days.
Before my agave and wine phase, which is current.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've gotten more sophisticated with your.
I feel like we're palate. In a similar phase at the moment.
Yeah, we told you this earlier, but our friends always used to do cocktail parties, and it was like everyone was just drinking whiskey. But at Steve's house, they had like all of these really cool like cocktail glasses. And so it was like kind of fancy, but it wasn't themed like this. Like it was fancy in that the drinks were like really honestly kind of high end.
It's worth doing. Custom koozies.
Worth doing well.
Good drinks.
Yeah.
It's worth doing it. You do it right. Yeah.
When we come to Austin, we would like to have a party with the koozies.
A themed party with good cocktails. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. No. But I think, that's so cool. I think there's like a lot of similarity between like Ranger Station was built out of this, like, oh, we're having people over to the house all the time, creating these cool experiences for people, right? And it always came back to that experience. Burning candles was always a part of that. So just started making candles. And it sounds like super similar. Like you were just, there was something in you that was like wanted to create experiences for people. Was that like always, part of you?
Yeah.
Were you like leading the charge on that?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't have that like entrepreneurial bend from childhood that you know, I think a lot of people, you know, you listen to a lot of podcasts, so these
people.
The exact.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, I was terrible at school, but man, I knew how to sell, and I was making, you know, selling widgets to my buddies at 8 years old. There was one incident in first grade where I got a little bit into commerce of getting people to pay me a quarter to give them fake injuries with a red pen, but that was more my artistic side.
So
you were
like
street smart.
Street smart.
I was just cool to look injured, I guess. I don't know. We were six.
Yeah.
Fast
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was more about being, and I loved school, and I got pretty good grades, and so that was not the guy who needed to be an entrepreneur to figure out how I wanted to live my life, but it was more create. I had two things. I had a love for creative. I thought I wanted to be an artist and then a cartoonist and then an architect. So I like to draw, I like to make stuff, I like to make music, but was never a professional musician. I was never quite good enough to be a professional artist, professional musician. So I kind of just held this back. And then when I finally got into the work world, I realized I love hospitality, and now I'm a bit of a hospitality junkie. And I had some ideas. My first idea was to start a brewery because I used to really like beer, and that could be a way into the hospitality industry. And then the last job I had, I actually took because they owned a bunch of restaurants. They invested in a lot of restaurants, and I really wanted to be a restaurateur. And I'm really glad I got turned off to that because I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
But yeah, hospitality was sort of the thing that drove a lot of that business sense and that sense of direction.
That's interesting. So cool. Yeah, because you see that in your stores too. Like, we spent time in Dallas with your team, and it's like you walk into the store and everyone is, I mean, that's like, hospitable is the perfect term for it. They're welcoming, they're like serving you drinks, they're like just letting you hang out. There's lots of spaces to, there's a bar. Yeah, it's so you kind of combine,
it's a hospitality experience.
Yeah
that has boots. That's amazing. Yeah,
and that was a relatively, you know, later addition. You know, I was doing, we started out selling boots online only, and that was kind of our shtick. Let's change the business model. But you know, honestly, by year three, I felt like we were succeeding in spite of that business model, not because of, meaning being online only. And I just, you could tell, like, we knew we wanted to be more, we knew we invested a ton in customer experience. You know, that was like always the first team we built, the one we paid a lot of attention to, the one everyone had to kind of go through at least for a little bit. And, you know, there's only so much you can do in a FedEx box. You know, no offense to FedEx, love our carriers.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, how much, you know, there's warmth that I think is missing. And, you know, so much of the Western hospitality experience is special and comes from those places of touching and feeling and smelling and pulling on a pair and getting advice and it being in real time and, you know, just sensory. And so, yeah, it was obvious that we needed stores, I think, almost as soon as the business was launched, although a lot of people thought it was kind of weird when we did that.
Right.
Yeah, retail's dead, like it's going away and all that. And you guys doubled down on it and just,
Which, by the way, it always annoyed me when that's the party line. You know, if you read the newspapers and if you read, you know, magazines and online, you know, digital publications, they don't, you know, it's strange because even now offline is still 80% of retail. And anyway, most people just don't realize that, I think.
Right.
And I think post pandemic too, I think this cool things happen where it's like, we all, like everybody was like, oh yeah, everybody's going to live their lives online. And then the pandemic happened. And then it was like, and when the world opened back up, it was just like, man, we want real life experience. Yeah. We want to get out there. And we want to do stuff.
That wasn't that great, actually.
Yeah. Be like, oh, we actually like being around other people and, you know, doing stuff in person. So, man, that's amazing. That's so cool. And you can definitely see all of that coming out in what you guys do.
I'm glad.
But
I
was going to say, I want to back up for a second. So, because in, so again, did a little bit of research on you. So, you know, grow up in Texas, you end up at Harvard. And there, you said something, I was actually listening to a podcast that you're on, and you said something that just like really, really stuck with me. And it was, you were, you know, you had, your path was like, you know, good grades. I was the same way. I was the exact same way where I was like, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to make good grades and do all that. Like, you know, I loved school, really excelled there. But so you do this, you go to Harvard. Then you end up in investment banking, right?
Consulting. And private equity.
Private equity. And I mean, you said something that I heard where you were like, you're 25, you're making more money than you know, ever thought you'd be making at 25. And you're sitting at the bar with your buddy and you're just like, I'm not fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
What, tell me about that. Like, what was it, you know, like, what was that feeling like, and how did you know, like, hey, this isn't, and what did that, I mean, I imagine there was some sort of like growing up, you're like, here's what success looks like. And you were kind of like living that identity of like, this is success. And then you're like, wait, I don't feel successful.
Yeah, I think I had, first of all, hindsight's 2020, and so my answer to that question is probably in some way more fulsome and insightful now than it was then, and probably not as true, because I don't really remember how I actually felt in some ways. But I do think that a big part of it is I was lucky in that I had that realization earlier on than I think a lot of people do, in part because I basically worked my butt off to get, you know, into the school I wanted to. And then my first two dream jobs, I mean, they were, I was like, I did exactly what I thought I was supposed mm-hmm. to do for me. Not, and you know, a lot of it was for external validation too. A lot of people, you know, want to go to an Ivy League school because everyone else will view them differently or whatnot. And it was always personal validation for me. And that was really, I think, helpful, because it was just for me. And it was just a feeling of, well, I'm not happy yet. And, you know, I've got a good life. But it made me think about what was missing. And I'm glad I did that, because I was in a place of freedom and I recognize a ton of privilege and very grateful for the position I was in. I was basically debt-free in my mid-20s, living in a fun city with a great job that was working with cool companies. And, you know, I could look around and be like, I am different from the guy in the cubicle next to me. And I have to think about what those differences are. And that has to be a way for me to think about that question of how I don't feel fully right. I don't feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Today, my answer to that is sort of, it's the kind of the, similar to the Japanese concept of ikigai, which is, you know, what you love to do, what you're good at doing, what the world needs you to do, and what you can get paid to do. And it just felt like I wasn't checking all those boxes. And I think about that concept a lot, and especially a few years ago when I decided to, well, not to cut to the chase, but when I decided to hire myself out of my role as CEO at Tecovas. But yeah, that was missing. And I realized that all the people around me, I was like, what are my differences? I am more risk tolerant. I'm extremely risk tolerant to a fault. I am creative, and I wasn't executing or using any of my creative brain almost. You know, I spent most of my day in Excel, and I was doing fun stuff and working with cool companies. These are brands. These weren't like B2B companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was figuring out how to sell candy actually, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Totally.
But those two elements just seemed to me to be something I needed to pay attention to. And so that was the moment, and it wasn't a bar. Yeah.
Was the risk tolerance thing something that was always, was that like, cause I feel like different people kind of have different stories there of like, they had like, at first they weren't risk tolerant, or they hated risk, and they kind of had to overcome that. Was that something that you had to learn, or was that just like always innate in you? You were just like, I'm going to,
I laugh because it was a major like fault, I think, of mine. I technically had one job before consulting. I worked briefly as an options trader. And so I really should be very well trained in risk and pricing risk.
Risk and analysis.
And yeah. Whatnot. I am one of three siblings. And, you know, if you go ask my parents, I think I was the only guy to overdraw my checking account. And I did it all the time. And I did it because I remember my mom pulled me aside once. And, you know, I was you know, working jobs in the summer to, you know, pay to get my spending money for college. But I'd still have to call my parents every now and then because, you know, lo and behold, I, you know, didn't say no to a lot of things that I should have said no to. And she's like, Paul, you're the only one of the kids who's doing this. And I said, and she remembers this. I don't. She said, I said, Mom, I'm just going to make enough money where I don't ever have to worry about this again. And I just had this kind of, you know, I wouldn't say that's a positive. I would just say it's a trait that I recognize. It was a confidence and a comfort with kind of a, hey, I'm here once. Like, it's not fun for me to think about, you know, restricting you know, good too much in my life. And it's something I need to be mindful of, actually. So I'm trying to look at both sides of the coin now. But at the time in 2013, 14, it was something I just needed to recognize as a fact.
Have you taken personality tests, like Enneagram or like DISC or anything?
I have,
What are you on the Enneagram?
I'm a D, strong D. Yes.
That is Jordan.
I'm feeling the connection already. Yes.
Yeah, a little C, a little bit of that analytical kind of introspective side. I'm not an S. I'm the opposite of an S.
Yeah.
I am an
D
S.
D is...
It's a good match.
It's a good match.
Don't know DISC. D is dominance. And it is like... I am literally like that. It's the only thing you can see on my chart.
Yeah. Like, Jordan's Steve's only like, D. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So risk taker over
Here. It's actually funny. My test said I was only D, but I like to think I'm a little...
You adapt. You're adapted. You're adapting up your S.
Our
your
team
C a little
can
bit.
Tell you that I am only... I don't have any C or S or I, maybe a little I.
That's amazing.
Anyways, I love that. And I hear that in what you're saying, that like willingness to take a risk. I mean, that's what allowed you to come out of this dream career, right? Like something in you was like, okay, I can take this next step. Like, how did you kind of get to that point?
Well, it's a humbling place too. And I think that, you know, I all of my college friends were very close. And when I told them what I was considering doing, meaning leaving, you know, a very high paying job, that was sort of what people aspire to do. People go to the best business schools to go try to get even one of the jobs that I had already had. And, you know, they're like, you're going to go start a boot store. and it takes, you know, you have to have a little bit of a crazy sense of confidence that other people describe as humility. I've never thought about it as humility, but yeah, I guess it was like a little humbling to take a lot of those phone calls and, you know, candidly, like looking at my bank account for about 5 years, sort of in the negative and floating around that. And when it could have been much different, obviously, but
like, did I do the right thing? Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But you know what's funny? I literally never had a doubt. And I think, again, maybe that's a fault. Maybe I need to think a little bit more about risk.
But... I think it's a strength. You just need to surround yourself with people who are... Yeah.
I do need the complimentary people in my life. Yeah. That is for sure.
I would definitely say that as a strength. Do you feel like there's... you said a couple things. There's like that, you know, the risk-taking and... you know, you definitely had to like take those phone calls of like, you know, people being like, wait, what are you doing? You're leaving this kind of dream job to start a boot store. Was there a part of that?
Which is how they described it too. And I said, no, it's a brand.
Right. Yes. You're like, wait,
a boot store? Yeah. It was like me going from drums to candles. They're like, you're just making candles. I'm like, it's a brand. It's like, you'll get it.
No,
one
at
day,
that but, time you're like, no, it's a lifestyle D2C brand.
Yeah. Using all the D2C buzzwords.
Yeah.
But was there a piece of that where it was like, almost like, I've got something to prove now, where it's like, there was this, and is there a part of you that felt like, you know, like almost like you're not comfortable unless you're in a place of challenge like that, where it's like, this isn't easy.
Yes. And yes. And that was the real truth as, even with, you know, whatever, my LinkedIn and my resume at the time, I was waitlisted at Harvard and had to work my butt off to get off the waitlist and spent my entire spring senior year, you know, writing letters to the admissions office, sending videotapes, sending my music, sending my art portfolio. I had a chip on my shoulder when I got there. I was rejected from my first job twice before getting on the third try. The consulting firm had a chip on my shoulder there, started late, was 6 months behind the rest of my class. So yeah, I mean, that's the real story is at all these places, I felt like it wasn't imposter syndrome. I don't think I've ever had that, but it was definitely like I'm working a little bit from behind and I have to prove it. Mm. And, you know, I was the only consultant at the private equity firm. Everyone else was a banker and you had to make Excels, you know, financial models. And I literally didn't even know how to do that. And so I had to work from behind there. And so I think I need a challenge. I think the magic moment for me was recognizing that combining that realization with creativity was where the magic is. And I'm sitting here today and my resume would say, like, you know, I should be like more of a COO or a CFO or president type. And I'm almost trying to do the opposite with my career. I find all of my energy in sort of that right brain side. And it's nice to have some training in the other stuff, but that's where, and I think maybe what I haven't figured out yet is it because of the second thing? Is it because I'm not traditionally trained at it? I've got a chip on my shoulder. I'm fashioning myself as a designer when I've never been trained in design. I think there's a little bit of that, but I also think I always wanted to be an artist, and I just kind of feel it in your heart and trying to go for it. And my creative work so far as Tecovas and a lot of the experiential elements and the, you know, the physical product we make, you know, I designed our products for the first 4 years and it was an amazing outlet and one that I'm very thankful for.
That's so cool. I actually wanted to ask you about that because you were saying that you wanted to be an artist and you wanted to be an architect. And I'm like, are you
this DC combo? That's like, I want to be an artist.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, right. So it's you weird. Are, yeah. How are you like flexing that creativity now? And like, are you still designing products?
I mean, a little bit influencing more so than designing.
A design team. Who's
Well, and that's been my realization as I've been trying to figure out more as Tecovas has progressed, you know, what is it that only I can do? Mm. That's sort of the question I try to ask myself every year. And I think everyone would be, it's also a question of privilege, and a lot of people don't get to ask that question maybe ever, or they think they can't. Although I would argue that most people can actually, and it isn't necessarily like CEO or, you know, world famous musician. That's not what most people are going to end up doing. There's very few people who are doing what only, you know, Chris Stapleton and Zach Bryan can do. Those are very those are unique individuals who are savants in some ways. But so not everyone is a savant, but it doesn't have to be a savant thing. Mm-hmm. I've kind of viewed it's the amalgamation of this stuff that I think is unique. I don't know anyone who would have made all the same decisions or been able to participate in the same kind of conversations. And I don't want to sound egotistical, but that I've been trying to say, you know, I've been trying to get comfortable with the fact that, no, I'm not, you know, in my daydream, maybe I've got an art gallery somewhere and I designed my own house, but I need to hire people for that. And that's fine. But there's probably a unique combination of things that will result in what people end up experiencing with Tecovas and, you know, whatever else, you know, comes out of this life. Totally. So I view it more as if I wasn't going to be a pro at this thing or that thing, maybe the being dangerous enough at three or four of those things can turn into something really special that will be hard to replace.
Mm. That's really cool.
And it does make you feel when you are in a position where you're like, oh, actually this would be pretty hard to replace what I'm doing. Yeah. It's a good place to be.
And totally. I mean, you said it, you don't want it to sound egotistical, but it's like, I think it is really important. Like we talk about this a lot. And I think, even when we think about our team, you know, it's like, okay, how do we get the people in the right seats doing what only they can do? It's not egotistical. It's actually a really wise way to,
it's very think. Self-aware.
Yeah. But we've been trying to kind of think through that for ourselves too. And it totally changes your work life and allows you to rely on people around you where you need to.
And you have to do it to grow too. It's just like you can't do it all. Right. Yeah. So it's and it allows you, like you just said, like be dangerous in like the areas that you really want to lean into.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, I'd say if you read all the management books, you know, pre 10 years ago about how to be a CEO, how to be an, you know, almost all the literature is like, just find someone smarter than you and get out of their way and find, and it's like, there's a lot of that. I get it. But that doesn't, you know, that only makes you really fulfilled if you've been kind of hired to do that. And if like your idea of success is getting out of the way. But I've realized I've got too much pent up sort of, energy to just be someone who's constantly getting out of the way. So it is, I think, just as important to find out, actively what you do want to spend time doing and not just like constantly Peter principling yourself out of your own business. So there's been plenty of areas where I, at Tecovas, we have been very self-aware, recognize areas that we need development and gaps filled and complementary skill sets. But, it's okay to be selfish and say, well, what do I really want to be doing too? It's not just like, someone's better than me out there. It's my job to go find them. It's
That's
kind of a depressing way to go through your career.
Yeah.
So what is your sweet spot? Like, what gets you out of bed in the morning? What do your days look like? What are you like most stoked to go do?
Anything to do with delivering our consumer promise, physically and experientially. Mm. So with product and the experience of storytelling. So to use less flowery language, I'd say I spend probably most of my time with the product team. Mm. And it's both on the merchandising and design side. Obviously we have people who do those jobs and I'm not responsible for either, but nor does anyone report to me for that. But it's, I'm influencing and I'm trying to make it clear that, hey, we're not that old of a brand. We're in our ninth year, but almost everyone on these teams is, somewhere in the few months to a few years on the team range. So the combined experience and the global view of the business, I think, is where I can help provide a lot of perspective. So it's product, it's brand. I love retail. Retail has become our source of providing hospitality in the way that we mentioned before. Radical hospitality is what we call it internally. It's one of our sort of pillars our business internally. But it was also a way for me to express my sense of design and
creativity.
Like, I hired my favorite architect in Austin to design our first few stores, and it was a little indulgent for me, but
you're like, I just want to make koozies.
We're picking out millwork. Fun stuff. So I ended up really liking retail and the world of interacting with consumers, and you end up learning a little about real estate in this world. You and I were talking about earlier. It's cool. So as long as it's engaging and I'm learning, I think I'm in a good spot. I didn't know a lot about apparel or women's apparel for that matter. Yeah. And, I'm in a lot of those meetings, not because I have like a crazy strong perspective on what the design direction of our, spring 25 women's, outerwear should look like, but because I want to learn. And I do think there is an element of tying, oneself to the brand story that people do need to be successful here.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, so you just touching on that, I think there's like, I think we're in such a cool time, like tying yourself to the brand story. There was, in recent years, it's been like, oh, tell your brand story. Like people are buying into a brand story, not like just the physical product. So now it's kind of like every brand's been like, okay, now I'm just going to like create a brand story. But it's different to be like living that story where you're just like, hey, like I just care. Like this has been birthed out of just like you pushing yourself, redefining success for yourself, and like leaning into like, hey, this is what I want to do. And this is just how I want to spend my time. And like, here's a cool product that's come out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you're touching on there for me, what rings true is, and we were talking about this at lunch with my team, actually, we're trying to figure, when we have improvement areas, I'm trying to figure out, well, how can I be helpful? And what is it the team might be missing in this area or that area of the process, or maybe a missing piece or a person that we don't have. And a lot of times it's just passion and it's like caring so much to get the right answer. And I think even for, I think a lot, I hired a CEO. So a lot of people looked at that as, oh, Paul wants to step away. Paul wants to step back. And don't get me wrong, I might very well want to do other creative things in my career separate from Tecovas, but that's not the why. And I think it's hard to relate to that unless you've been an entrepreneur and you're like, man, I don't care who is in what seat. Like this kind of, this came out of me. This is a, it came out of a very, and this is, maybe this is a little bit unique to me in terms of the spike, but you should ask my team this, because I do think they would probably describe me this way. And like the reason I have such strong opinions when asked about things that may seem not as important is because I think they are really important. And I think that it's so important to get the details right. It's so important to get anything that affects the consumer's perception of the brand right. And it's not a, I try not to be getting in the way of people. I'm not, and this isn't like being cute for the sake of being cute, being detail oriented for the sake of being detail oriented. It's like really recognizing, no, that is the thing that's actually going to move someone along into the deepen their consumer love for the brand. And I think we're underestimating. So when I tend to get more passionate with the business, it tends to be areas where I think we as a team maybe aren't quite appreciating to the level that we should. Like, man, we're supposed to be 10 out of 10 here, and we're kind of 8 out of 10, and we really need to be 10 out of 10. And I'm gonna poke on it a little bit. I'm gonna poke on it a little bit harder.
Yep. Yeah.
Until we get to 10 until out of 10. Get
that. Oh, I love that.
It's reflective of us, and I want people to feel that way and that sense of ownership. And that kind of sounds BS. You know, a lot of people join startups and like, oh, we're a family. And by the way, we don't say that. We say we're a team.
Yeah.
You know, and teams important too. You know, teams win championships. Teams have strong bonds for a long time, if not forever. And if you do it the right way. But you kind of have to have a team mindset to get the passion. You got to get people who want to win. And, you know, that's where it's easy for me to say, because that was my natural instinct going into it.
And it's personal.
It's harder to teach though. Yeah. It's harder to make it personal.
Yeah.
100%. You just touched on some stuff where I'm like, as you explain, I mean, you're talking about Tecovas and your team and everything like that, and then your role. And I think you're touching on cool things where, you know, it's like, if you're doing something 8 out of 10, it's like, why, you know, there's an opportunity to go 10 out of 10. And I think it kind of comes back to that, like, I would love to hear from you, like, what does success for you look like? I think you're kind of touching on it. It's like living that brand story. It kind of looks the same for you as it does for Tecovas probably, but like, what does, you know, cause you know, you go to Harvard, you get these great jobs and you're like, I thought this was success. Maybe it's not. So like, where are you like in kind of this journey? Like, what's a success and fulfillment look like for you today?
Man, I don't know yet. I am figuring that out. But I mean, listen, the real, I think, fulfillment comes from breadth and depth of life. And it's obviously not all from work. And I think for me, you know, and maybe for everyone, you just got to think about, you know, filling which cups you want to fill. And right now, you know, I don't have kids, I don't have a family of my own. And so, yeah, a lot of my life fulfillment comes from this creative output. And so, yeah, I want that to be full and deep and wide and have a long runway. And so I want to think about what's always next on the horizon for Tecovas or for me. And so I like having a lot of stuff in the hopper. I like being connected, but you know, I kind of have the buckets currently, and we'll add what buckets later, but it's, you know, it's creative fulfillment. It's feeling good personally and having balance. And thankfully I've been able to pay a lot more attention to that bucket recently in the last 2 years.
After you hired your CEO.
Yeah. Work out every day.
Yes.
There you go. Get a lot of sleep every day.
Yes.
Yeah. You actually get to sleep now. Yeah.
Meditate every now and then. I'm not very good at it. You know, and I think that bucket needs to be filled. And then once that's filled, you can be better for others. And then, you know, relationship and relationships and, you know, feeling deeply connected on that front. So I think it's good to take a step back and say, you know, those are really the buckets that matter. And then family and kids maybe might come in that. But yeah, for me, we're kind of talking about that first bucket. And that's, for me, what's been on my mind a lot lately, because I did delete a lot as well from that bucket.
You know, I
deleted a lot of the stuff that was filling my time. You know, I had 10 direct reports and, you know, had 2/3, 3/4 of a calendar filled every week automatically before you even started thinking about your priorities and your strategy and your, you know, the rest of your life. And now it's more zero-based.
Yes.
It's more like... All right, wait, I need to fill this calendar, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's cool, because it's like, I think it's something that happens is like the reason you kind of like start some, where you kind of end up, especially in that CEO role, it's like that's, it's not like always your days look so different than like why you kind of started the thing.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've kind of like
a lot happens by default.
Yeah. And you've done a good job of like kind of getting yourself back to like, oh wait, like I've, you know, why did I start this, and kind of get back to like, oh, this is what like fills me up, and realizing it's okay to be like, I'm not going to be CEO anymore. I'm going to go do this thing that I really enjoy. Not to say you didn't enjoy the other thing too, but you're just like, hey, this is like why I started it. I want to get back to that. Yeah. I think that's really cool.
So what do you do for fun? Like, what do you do in your downtime?
Oh man, good question. Well, I like to, I do work out a lot, but that's more just like a baseline. I like to be outside, but I don't like the heat that much. So I spend a lot of time in Colorado.
Yeah. You live in Texas, but don't like the heat.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been going to Colorado as much as I can to escape the heat.
Doing skiing or hiking, or what are you doing?
Skiing. I've got 27 days on the slopes this year.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to Beaver Creek on Tuesday, and I'm just like, I'm counting down the hours.
It's great. I mean, being outside, and if you can figure out a way to do physical activity outside in a way that's almost meditative, like, that's been amazing. I'm a bit of a hospitality junkie, so, you know, I basically don't cook as almost an excuse to always be going somewhere new.
Experiencing.
I like to travel. And, you know, that's kind of the baseline.
Yeah.
Still love music. Used to, you know, play as a kid, but never was in a band. So I love kind of pretending that I could have been in a band and going to a lot of live shows. And
do you still play at all?
No, I played piano. I've got one in the house, but usually only get on those keys at around 1 a.m. when there's people still over on the last cocktail or two.
Yep.
You're still hanging.
That's a safe place.
And there's
a
piano at one of my favorite bars in Austin called the White Horse that sometimes can find me on that.
Oh, there we go. Okay. All right. You let us know when. I'm there.
This is so good. We're definitely going there.
That's amazing.
Man, that's cool. Okay. So something we've kind of asked all of our guests is, what does legacy look like for you? Like, what, when you look down the road and you're like, all right, I'm like retired, I'm done. Like, what is like purpose and meaning and legacy for you?
To jump off that too, it's like to give you a little bit more context, something that we just personally say this a lot, and just as like a Ranger Station team, it's like this idea of like, we want to die with memories, not dreams, not to be morbid, but it's like at the end of our lives, it's
like that.
You know, we want to have all these, you know, things. So that's kind of like where this comes from. But yeah, what's that kind of, when you're at that point, what's that mean for you?
I think that's a huge part of it for me too, not to just cop out, but I would start with by saying, I want those buckets to be as full as possible. And, you know, they come at the expense of each other. So you have to determine that balance, and you have to time things. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices in one to get to the other. But, you know, I'd say I want that to be balanced. I want to be someone who's looking at their life, and I believe you live once, and it's a pretty long life if you do it right, but you live once, you know, you live long, but you should make it long and deep, and you should see the world. And so I definitely want that to be a huge part of it. I don't just mean travel, but I mean like seeing what it means to do X, Y, and Z in business, seeing what it means to live in a different place, see what it means to try to learn when you're about something when you're older. You know, it could be a long list of things. So I resonate a lot with that. And then I think finally it would just be, I want people to be able to answer the question of like, you know, what was most important about Paul? Like I'd say, well, he treated me well, you know, he made the right decisions, and, you know, for lack of a better word, he did good. You know, I'm very mindful of that. You know, a lot of people say, you know, your reputation is your most important asset. You know, it takes, you know,
it's good,
a lifetime to build and a day to crash that stock.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's not rocket science to be good and do good. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be a crazy philanthropist. It doesn't mean you have to adopt 20 kids. You know, there's a lot of ways that people define that, but it would be really important for me. So integrity is what is the word I've used internally for both business and personal. So high integrity buckets filled and a very short list of woulda, coulda, shouldas.
Yeah. That's man, that's yeah, good. That that's wasn't really a cop out answer. That was good.
No, that's amazing. No, yeah, I think there's a lot in that for sure. So, and in the short time we've known you so far, like I can definitely see that in you. So, yeah, I think just leaning into those pieces of the, like you said, like living deep and wide at the same time. And I think it's hard. Like you pointed out something where it's like filling those buckets kind of come at the expense of each other. And I think it's like, when you said that, I was like, man, like that is such a struggle to be like care about so many things. I want to do everything 100%. But learning how to be okay with like knowing that, you know, you only have 100% of your time and you can only give pieces of that to certain things.
Well, I think every few years, it just means your life has to evolve. Yes. I mean, yeah. You guys have two kids. Like, I mean, it's probably very different than it was 5 years ago. Right.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's a very different, and by the way, what fell off? I'm sure mm-hmm. some stuff fell off. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I have another very good friend who's building a business right now and has a young child, and he's been very frank with me. He's like, you know, Paul, like the social stuff, I looked at my pie and I just chopped it off because it'll come back, but I chopped it off for now.
Totally. Yep.
I feel okay with it. And I think having the courage to ask yourself that, as often as you can, mm-hmm. I mean, not every day and maybe not even every month, but at least once a year.
Yeah. We ask do yourself. That. We do. We do. I was telling you, we did our little staycation, in January, but that's what we do. We like take a retreat and we analyze like, okay, what happened last year? And actually what happened last year?
Yeah,
we exhausted ourselves.
Yeah.
I blacked out.
It's like, well, we can't do that exactly the same way again. So, right.
So let's reframe this. And it feels like it's cliche. It's like the beginning of the year, but it's like, no, it's really necessary to see like, okay, what's actually happening in our lives and how can we like give our best to what we're doing. And like, you know, we do have two kids and the community, like friendship, social part actually hasn't fallen off because we're like, no, we can't, that's not who we are. Mm-hmm. So our kids have to adapt and like they're we're crushing like,
come
it.
Come on with us. Yep. Yep.
But I like that too. I mean, that's the story that and by the way, I think that's the story I want to write to at some point.
Yeah. Totally. And it's doable.
It's
like,
so doable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, but yeah, some things fall off, but if you're just like, oh man, we want to keep this social thing. It's like, yeah, it's so doable. You just got to like, you know, put some effort into like making sure that you're doing that.
Yeah. And, but
they'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they'll be better. Like, like you'll you just go to sleep there. You're going to be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can feel like, you know, this year I'm traveling less because I'm like, I can't, so making sure you're like keeping those things in check and like, so you're able to bring your best to what you are pouring into is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said, you know, kind of like on that fulfillment thing, it's like as there's almost kind of something I've kind of heard you say as you're kind of going through this. It's like everything's always changing and there's always a part of you that maybe is a little bit unfulfilled. And that's like where you're like, I need to go do kind of the chip on the shoulder thing where you're like, I'm going to go after that. I'm going to go after this. And that's always changing. But it sounds like you've done a really good job of like almost realizing that is almost success in itself, and fulfillment in itself is like, you're, you know, there's never going to be a point where you've checked all the boxes and then you're just going to sit back and be like, I'm good.
You know? Yeah. I did think it was possible though.
Yeah.
And I think most people even thought it might be. Yeah. I mean, this is why almost everyone I know I think it's harder to find someone who's at the end of a 20 to 50 year career. Let's pick your number, who is truly happy being retired and just, you know, golfing, unless they're like obsessed with golf.
Totally.
Which I'm not. Maybe someday I'll get good at golf. I still can't break 100, but I think it's harder to find those people than it is to find the people who thought they would be happy. And, you know, for me, I had this dream when I started Tecovas, like, oh, it'll go public or I'll sell it someday and I'll make a lot of money. And then I'll just make art and music and be happy and everything, all the boxes will be checked. And, you know, obviously we're not there yet. We're very much in the thick of things, but you know, I did create more room in my life to spend a little more time doing what I want to do. And that magic moment never happened, you know?
Yeah.
Totally.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think, again, similar to how I'm glad I realized when I was 25 that, you know, I had a couple of my dream jobs and maybe I wasn't happy. And, you know, now I'm 35. I feel pretty lucky to know that I can look at my life with, which hopefully is
totally
many decades ahead with clearer eyes and maybe not that naive expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
Amazing.
That.
Amazing. Well, Paul, thank you for doing this, man. This has been so fun.
Yeah.
It's been life-giving just to like hear from you and like your story and passion behind what you do. So
yeah, just talk yeah. about dreams, didn't
yeah. yeah.
We sell That's cowboy what we do, boots. Right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm the boot
Usually
guy.
They're like, hey, and what's your koozies. Favorite style?
And koozies. Yeah.
Which, you know, happy to answer.
Yeah.
No, thank you for doing this, man. This has been so fun.
Yeah, thank you all for having me.
Yeah.
Always good to visit Nashville.
Yeah. Cheers.
Hey, one last one.
Yeah. Salud.
Makeshift old fashioned.
Tequila old fashioned.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right.
Done and done.